You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it to you.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way, because you are listening to the movie show.
How you doing?
What's up?
Got you there, didn't I?
We are not doing a Friends review. I know it sounded like it.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Yeah, my name's Ryan.
My name's Sash.
And you're watching...
or listening...
to the movie...
show.
No. You have to do the show properly.
To the movie show. I don't know what the...
to the movie show. You have to do it.
There we go. Okay. On Active FM. Yeah.
Welcome to this week's podcast, and coming up in this exciting...
we are killing Bill. Bill is dead. Uma Thurman will kill Bill.
Yes.
2003.
And if you're...
except they lied, because they split it into two parts.
True. Were you expecting that?
I don't know what I was expecting.
I don't like it when they do that.
I wasn't even expecting the storyline to be that simple as Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know what Kill Bill was. Yeah. And then when the movie started, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense why it's called Kill Bill.
Yeah, that's basically it. And if you are a first-time listener, you will see that the previous podcasts are all Quentin Tarantino
films,
and we are in a Quentin Tarantino
marathon.
Boom.
Starting with, okay, we had Dan, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Inglourious Men That Were Born Out of Wedlock, and Django. Before, in fact...
do the line.
The Django! We did that in, I think, 2020. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we did recently. And then that kind of got us on, like, this Quentin Tarantino. So then we did Reservoir Dogs. We did Pulp Fiction. We did Jackie Brown. And this week, we are doing Kill Bill Volume 1. Can I say, shockingly enough...
you're allowed to say it.
Thank you.
Well, it's not about allow. You can.
I think this is my favorite Quentin Tarantino film.
Really?
I loved this movie. I was like, this movie is so cool. And I honestly didn't expect for that to... like... just the way it was done. Like, even the part where the screen split and you had Uma Thurman lying there, like, unconscious, and the nurse chick walking up. Like, everything, even the black and white, the anime sequence. They legit switched to a whole anime sequence.
In the middle of the movie. Yes.
This movie was proper. The music was amazing.
The music.
And it is one of Quentin Tarantino's films to only, well, not only, basically the F word was stated under 100 times in this film.
Congratulations.
Which for a Quentin Tarantino film, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So like that, which was nice because like often with these films, it's just like swearing every second word. Mm. Whereas now it was, you know, not every second word. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, not so much swearing in this one.
And Uma Thurman, I loved her. I loved her so much. Honestly, her character is the bride. That is the name of her character. If you watch the film, you'll actually notice in the beginning of the film, her name's beeped out.
Yeah.
They literally put a beep sound effect over her name. But if you looked carefully when she goes to the airport and gets a ticket... her name is actually on the ticket. So if you were looking out for it, then you would see her name.
Freeze frame right now.
Zoom in.
If you're watching the movie show, there it is. And if you're not watching the movie show, go watch the movie show. It's on YouTube. Go onto YouTube and go look for Active TV. And then under the playlist, go look for the movie show. You're going to see exactly what you're talking about. And we are going to show you other things that we'll be talking about. So you don't have to go and Google it or... go and search for it.
Or imagine it.
Yeah, best just go there right now because we still got a good lineup coming, well, a good show ahead of us. So now is probably the best time to do it. So go do it and give us a like. It's right at the bottom there. Give us a like, a thumbs up, and hit the subscribe button because I know that you want to subscribe to this channel. You know why? Because you hit the like button. Because you hit the like button tells me that you like this channel. That's why you want to subscribe, because you like the channel. Makes sense.
Does.
And now continuing in the movie show.
So, Kill Bill Volume 1 was released in 2003. It is an action crime film, which is very... It actually is different. His previous films before this one was always a crime drama. This one is an action crime.
This isn't even just a... Can I tell you something? Classify a crime. A crime is bad guy, good people die, solve the problem. This is just bad person die... Bad person goes after bad person. Is it still a crime?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
This is just like get even.
Yeah. It's a revenge movie.
Thank you.
It is
revenge.
A revenge. It is a revenge. So Quentin Tarantino, when he describes the film in interviews, he said it was a revenge movie.
Lion. Yeah.
A revenge movie.
Revenge, yes. Revenge crime. No. Revenge.
Action crime.
Revenge.
Okay, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. Is it 2 hours and 40 minutes?
I wasn't looking at the time.
I think it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. And the budget for the film was $30 million US, and the box office was $180.9 million US.
Sure.
Yeah, they did well.
Keep rolling.
But I honestly can say, out of all Quentin Tarantino's films, Pulp Fiction is a very, what's the word? Like, there's a lot of Pulp Fiction references within the film industry, and like if you love films, like you know Pulp Fiction, but Kill Bill as well. Like I have seen that yellow jumpsuit. I'd seen that yellow jumpsuit before even watching the film. Yeah. Like I think Kill Bill also, there's a lot of references to Kill Bill in movies and et cetera, et cetera.
I watched it the other way around. So there are a lot of movies that Kill Bill references to, if that makes sense.
Yes, and that, yeah.
Like, tons of them. And you know what the first thought is that went into my head when I saw this? Well, the conclusion that I came to. It makes sense that Quentin Tarantino worked in a movie shop, watched a lot of movies.
Movies, yeah.
There was a lot of pieces that he thoroughly enjoyed. And he said, I want to put that in one of my films. And that's where, you know, you can see how he used those favorite parts of his favorite films and he inserted them into his movies.
But I think also one of the things that's nice about it is when he was in a video store, it was a completely different era of films that were coming out. So a lot of the films that he probably would have been selling at that time, we actually, this generation, haven't necessarily watched them just because of it was that era. So now he's making movies.
It's like a revival.
Yes. And he's like, he's showing and referencing all of these films that we've actually never watched, but that influenced him so much. And so that's, I think, really cool. I think also another thing that really stands out for Quentin Tarantino is the whole Japanese film industry. Because I remember even Reservoir Dogs, there was actually, I think, a Japanese story just like Reservoir Dogs. In fact, like, it was people still said, but he just made like the English version of that Japanese movie. And he did say that he got inspiration from that Japanese film. And I know with this film as well, there was a lot of Japanese inspiration. The yellow jumpsuits was actually inspired by a
what's his name?
Jackie Chan had worn.
Mm-hmm.
In, I'll tell you, not Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee, sorry,
Bruce Lee. That's the guy.
And he wore a yellow jumpsuit in a movie called Game of Death, and she then wears a lot of like the costume. Plus, they filmed a lot of this movie in Japan and China. And I remember when watching an interview with Quentin Tarantino, he actually said he loved filming in Japan and China, and when he felt like it was home when he was filming there, and when they moved to go film the scenes in like the States, and that like he felt like it wasn't home. He felt like filming in Japan and that was home. And then Uma Thurman also said there was a lot of translators all over the set. So you'd have English to Japanese translators, you'd have Japanese to English. So like literally there were just a whole bunch of different translators all around the set, obviously because it was such a bilingual set that they needed a lot of translators.
I'm sure, especially around that, Crazy 88, that whole fight scene that happened.
That scene was brilliant. Mm. It was so intense, but it was, this whole movie was brilliant. I love the part where she's trying to move her big toe. Like, just that whole, and the start of the movie, Quentin Tarantino is brilliant at starting films because he grabs you in. You don't know what's going on. You're not sure where you are, what's happening, but he just grabs you in with action and you're like there. And then as the story goes along, then you kind of like, okay. Oh, you're like, you let in on what's happening.
And you're like, wait, what?
The music in this movie was also amazing. Because there was such a, it was such a big, like at one point they sound, you know, like I think it was the crazy 88 fight sequence, or it might have been the last sword sequence. Mm. They brought in like this very Spanish sounding soundtrack, mm-hmm. but it's like completely, mm-hmm. you're in Japan, there's samurai swords, mm-hmm. like there's no Spanish nowhere, mm-hmm. but like there's like the Spanish music, mm-hmm. like they're about to do a duel.
Which was that one? I shut you down. Bang,
oh yes,
bang,
bang. That was in the beginning of the film. And then they often played like an instrumental version of it. Yeah. So at the beginning of the fight scene between Oren and the bride, so the main character, Uma Thurman, is the bride, and then Oren is the she was Chinese, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I can't remember her backstory now. She became leader of like the mob in Japan, but I think she was Chinese. She had a weird heritage.
She might.
She still chopped that dude's head off over him bringing up her heritage.
She might. She African American?
No.
Are you
wasn't
sure?
Wasn't she Chinese American?
I think she was African American.
She wasn't African American.
The
Chinese chick, right? How is the Chinese chick African American?
The first fight.
No. The last fight.
But she was African American.
Yeah, she was African American.
The first fight.
Yes. That fight was cool though.
Okay,
as well.
Yes, the Chinese chick, yes. The one the head that
yes. So
yeah, she was Chinese, all right.
She says to the bride before they start fighting, I hope you saved Japanese. I hope you saved your energy. And if you haven't, you may not last 5 minutes. It is exactly 4 minutes and 59 seconds from the time she steps forward. And the music cues until the fatal blow of the duel where she actually loses. So it took the bride 5 minutes. That fight sequence was 4 minutes and 59 seconds long.
She didn't have to last 5 minutes.
Because she killed her in 4 minutes, 59 seconds. Mm. That fight sequence as well was just, yeah.
Quite a weird, what I find interesting is whenever there's a fight in the snow and it involves sharp objects, because you see the blood. The blood is quite evident.
Yes, against the whites.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know that, I think her name was Gogo, that crazy high school chick that she hired to be her bodyguard.
The young chick that is supposed to be her bodyguard.
Yeah. So when they were shooting the scene where she flings her ball and chain out, you know that scene? Mm. She accidentally hit Quentin Tarantino on the head as he stood by the camera. Yeah. This would be like, sorry. I'm sure he laughed it off though, you know.
What do you do? That's when I'm just like, okay. Well, it was nice being on this. At least I know what a scene looks like. Did some acting, great, okay.
I think Quentin Tarantino is the type of guy that would laugh that off.
Yeah.
Be like, good shots. All right, let's do it again. Yeah. Or even put it in the final film.
Because it wouldn't have been, do you think it would?
I don't think it was actually sharp.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because
bleep, 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 bleep. What you bleep ain't doing, man? Ah, take five. In fact, I think that's a wrap for today.
And then according to Quentin Tarantino and Uma Thurman in a DVD documentary, the idea for Kill Bill actually began during the filming of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
now,
that's right.
Pulp Fiction was not the film that Quentin Tarantino made before Kill Bill. The film he made before Kill Bill was Jackie Brown. Mm. So there was quite a big, extensive period of time between the original idea and the actual making of Kill Bill. But the two began talking about the kinds of movies that they'd like to do. And Quentin said to Uma that he'd like to do a 70s style kung fu flick. And Uma came up with the idea of the film opening with the shot of a bride. So basically the whole idea behind this film is there's this deadly assassin. She's literally like the deadliest assassin in the world. But she decides that she wants to get out of that whole industry and get married and, you know, live a normal life. But then they find her on her wedding day and then they kill her, but they don't actually kill her because she doesn't die. Instead, she spits in the cop's face. It was so weird. And then the whole movie then becomes a revenge film because at the wedding, they wanted to kill her. They killed her husband, et cetera, et cetera. So the whole idea behind the film is a revenge film. But then they came up with this idea. Then after finishing up Pulp Fiction, Quentin and Uma didn't see each other for quite a while. And when they did eventually see each other, Quentin then went back to the drawing board with Kill Bill because he really, really wanted to make this movie. And Uma Thurman actually fell pregnant when they were supposed to start filming. And he actually moved production back so that obviously she could have the baby, and then they would continue filming. Yeah, suppose they filmed the bride the wedding day though, because she was pregnant, obviously.
Makes sense.
On her wedding day. Yeah,
makes good sense.
And then Christopher Nelson, he worked on the special effects, revealed in an interview that over 450 gallons of fake blood was used in the two Kill Bill movies.
That is your Quentin Tarantino.
But
film,
I feel like this was this the bloodiest one?
It was still pretty bloody.
No, it was very bloody.
I
saw in behind the scenes
footage.
It was
bloody, bloody, you know?
So, you know, in the crazy 88 scene,
yeah.
There was obviously she like chopped people's heads off and stuff. Mm. They literally built like these mechanical. So basically, it was a man's body, but without his head. And then they obviously added, because you know how whenever someone's head was chopped off, the blood would like spray. I suppose that's. I don't know if that would. I don't want to know if that's what would happen.
Even the assistant when they chopped her arm off,
it was like psh, like a hose pipe. But like literally, you saw that this doll or whatever that they this mechanical whatever that they had built, and then obviously they had the
triggers
blood to squirt the blood out. But it was quite intense, man.
Mm.
It was very intense. Yes, there was a lot of blood in the film, but it's not like for me it's. The way Quentin Tarantino does it is not. The Renovant was very realistic with Leonardo DiCaprio.
It doesn't make it realistic. It almost just puts it in an
a comical,
entertaining.
Yes.
Entertaining,
so you're not sitting there wanting to throw. You're not wanting to like throw up because.
You're just like, ah.
You just get the point that, okay, this person just died. There's blood everywhere. Yeah.
It's like in movies when somebody like pukes. It's like a hose pipe.
Yes. Bleh. Projectile.
I don't know if you've ever watched, the name has just slipped me. A kid.
The Man from Toronto.
With that guy.
Adam Sandler.
The
No. Home Run.
Spoiled child. A child that is like extremely naughty. And eventually they send him to, you know, whatever boarding school. But he basically like gets his whole family to throw up, and it was.
Why does this ring a bell?
And everyone's just like, bleh. And they're like, bleh. And the other guy's like, no, bleh. And they're like, and it's
that actually does ring a bell.
And it's comical in the way that it's done, but you're just like, oh,
like,
really? Nah.
Yeah. And then approximately $60,000 of the movie's budget was used on swords and sword accessories.
Yeah, I wonder where they are.
Yeah, true.
Do you think he keeps that collection? Wait. First of all, do you think it was hired or bought?
Or made.
Even better.
Sometimes they make them. So, one thing if you picked up in Pulp Fiction, so that's the first time Uma Thurman had worked with Quentin Tarantino. Yep. She goes to the diner with John Travolta, and then he says to her, so you were in a pilot? And she was like, yeah, I was in a pilot. It was about this girl assassin squad called, I think, the Fierce Fox. And then she names, the leader was a blonde, there was this Chinese chick, there was this African-American chick, and there was this French chick. And then he asks her, what were you and what was your specialty? And she says knives. Literally, they played on that because in this film, you see the bride who her speciality is knives. And then they literally show you, there's obviously the Chinese or the Japanese chick that that fight is at the end. There's the African-American who she kills in the beginning. There's the blonde chick that walks in while she's in the hospital, and then Bill tells her not to kill her. So literally, and then the French is the assistant to the Japanese chick. So they I like how they pulled that in. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? It's like Kill Bill was the pilot that Uma Thurman's character in Pulp Fiction. Yeah, so I liked how they pulled
all
that across.
Also, well together.
This is once again a Quentin Tarantino trademark, but this film starts and then goes back in time.
That's right.
So you start with her killing the second person. Actually, so she's got a list of, I think, five. Mm. That she wants to kill five people. Yeah. Bill's the last person.
What do they call it again? The something to do with
the
venomous.
Yes.
Oh,
man.
Venomous snakes, whatever those. And they each like snakes and stuff like that. And it's... wasn't Kill Bill also something referenced to a specific animal that actually like kills snakes or tame that they literally like kill snakes?
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes. There's this like it's a type of mole, and it literally it's fast enough to grab the snake, but apparently Kill Bill is referenced to that animal, and then plus he's got his venomous five whatever snakes type of thing.
Oh, that makes
sense.
So
it's quite an interesting fact trivia there for
you. But so she kills when the movie starts. Okay, the movie starts with the day of her wedding, right, where she's beaten up and you're like, oh my goodness, and they shoot her, which that was such a strong
like
start.
Right there, like close up.
You're like, wait, who got shot? Wait, she couldn't have gotten shot.
And it's in black and white.
Yes. Oh, it was insane. It was Quentin knows how to start movies.
Bill. And I love the way that they put the bill on his handkerchief.
Mm, yes.
Even though, like, who puts their name on their handkerchief if you think about it?
But, like, the whole movie, you don't really see Bill's identity.
But you know it's Bill.
Yeah, you do know it's Bill. And then it cuts to now, obviously, like years later, I suppose, or months later. Mm. No, it is years later. And then she goes to kill the second person on her list. So once she's killed her, you see her cross out the second person. Then she now narrates and says the first person she's killed already. But then we go back in time to now see how she survived that with her wedding day.
Yeah.
And then started on this revenge journey, and then the movie ends with her only killing the first person. So he starts the movie at the end, actually. Then you go back, and then you like get caught up, and obviously in volume two, then you now we'll see. But how was the ending? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
No, do you know what I'm talking about? The last line of the film. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, spoiler alert. Where he says, does she know her daughter's still alive? You're like, no! Because she doesn't.
Because, throughout the film...
You think everyone died.
You think that the baby...
Yeah, no, this film was... I'm thoroughly looking forward to the second volume of Kill Bill. Yeah.
But like I said, the thing for me is that you watch a film to expect an end. And then you get a cliffhanger.
No, but this one was satisfying.
And then again, it is a Quentin Tarantino trait. It's his thing where he kind of leaves question marks. But at least this one is not going to leave there.
No. But it was satisfying though. Because, so obviously the ultimate storyline is, you know, she wants to kill Bill. Hence the name.
Because who was it? It was the assistant that was still alive, eh?
Yeah. So she kept the assistants alive. Yes.
It was one of them.
Yes.
Yes.
So now she's got, technically I don't know if she's going to kill the assistant still. And then there's the blonde chick.
No, I think she left her.
No, but I'm saying in volume two, she'll I'm sure she's on the list. And then obviously Bill's the last person. Mm. But the way he sets it up is, I was satisfied by the end of the film because she kills the Chinese chick, and that was that was the main focus, because she still went into the whole backstory of how this chick's parents were killed in front of her, and then she rose to the top by killing the dude.
She had some special sword.
Yeah, and then et cetera, et cetera. So like by the end of the film, I was satisfied because she had killed the Chinese chick, and apparently she was supposed to behead her, but then the reason Quentin changed it was she wouldn't have then gone, it really is a, you know, she she told her what sword it was. Obviously, it was made by that guy, and she didn't believe her. Yeah. And then at the end, she says it really is a whatever sword, and then falls over. So that's why he chopped off. But how is it the hair flying? You're like, oh, she lost her hair.
Even the camera shots.
Yes.
You see, like says some name. And then
falls over. But also, I saw a behind-the-scenes photo with her and Uma Thurman with her makeup. And she's like...
And they're like...
Yeah. And her head's like chopped off. She's got like half a head, brains showing.
It's weird. You only notice then that her head's just a bit extended.
Yes.
To make a place for the...
Prosthetics.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. Mm. And then as Quincentino, so there was, I loved the band, the band that was playing at that.
The Chinese, what, Japanese? Yeah, the Japanese, they're actually Japanese
called
band,
the
right?
5678s, that's their name.
Yeah.
And he was leaving Japan after initial location scouting and securing the studios, and he heard this girl band called the 5678s playing over, he was in a specific store and he heard them playing over the speakers, and he was so intrigued by the music that he actually asked the clerk who the band was. And when they told Tarantino who it was and showed the CD, he asked them, can I have the CD? And they said, no, well, you can go and purchase the CD at that store. But he didn't have the time to go to that store because he was leaving. So he said to them, can I pay you? I'll even pay you extra for the CD and then you can go and just purchase another CD. And they were like, well, we'll have to call the manager. And he was like, okay, please call the manager. So he actually ended up purchasing it from that store. And then in the final showdown at the House of Blue Leaves segment, they literally play the whole time. And honestly, they were a perfect fit. They really were a perfect fit. And all of the band's songs, including the standouts, woohoo, you know that, that song they sang, are all covers of early 60s surfer songs. So that was, that was really cool. Also, director trademark, a long take. Quentin Tarantino always does this, and I love it.
Yeah.
So after the bride leaves Oren, who's the Chinese chick that she kills, she leaves the door at the House of Blue Leaves where Go-Go returns inside. You know, she still waits up on the roof. And yo, I was so scared that chick was going to look up. I was like, please don't look up. Please don't. And you know how normally in movies they're like so secure in the, you know, when they jump and hide, they always look like it's nothing. Here it was brilliant because you could see her like shaking, and you could actually see, like, at any point I was like, oh, she's gonna fall down and they're gonna kill her. But I liked how he actually showed that it's not easy to hang onto the roof type of thing. But the camera then follows her down the stairs, through the bar, past the kitchen, into the ladies' room.
Yep.
When then we go, I loved it when she went into the little cubicle and then he removed the. I loved that transition where you could see her in the cubicle, but it was, he like removed the layer to that was really cool. And then you see Sophie along the exact same path to the ladies' room, ending with the ring of her cell phone. And the shot is done in a single unedited take. It is unedited. And apparently, they had to obviously redo this take.
It's like six.
Yes. It took them 6 hours to rehearse. Six hours to rehearse. And then it was shot in 17 takes. So they did this one long shot 17 times. And apparently after that, the Steadicam operator, Larry McConkie, I think that's his surname, was rumored to have passed out from exhaustion.
I would imagine so.
The camera guy passed out after doing this one take 17 times. It was insane. And but then, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was so good. It was amazing.
Definitely worth.
Yeah. And then another trait, obviously, is the trunk shot. So the camera's in the trunk and it's looking up at which would have been the bride.
That's
when
right.
she's interrogating Sophie. And you see her from Sophie's point of view with her obviously being, she had the motorbike mask or helmet on. Yeah. And then in the early stages of filming, Oren was supposed to be, I mentioned that her head was supposed to be chopped off, but then they changed it. Yes. And then there's, so if Django actually paid homage to Kill Bill, because in the final fight scene in Django, Jamie Foxx tells Stephen, who was played by, or Stephen, however they pronounce it, Samuel L. Jackson, to stay right there. right? So he says to him, stay right there, which mirrors the scene in which the bride tells Sophie to stay right where she is after the aftermath of the sword battle with the Crazy 88. So, you know, she says to them, "You can, if you're still alive, you can all leave, but leave your limbs because they belong to me." And then she tells Sophie, "You stay right where you are." Django did that as well. So that was cool how he then...
Favorite line.
Yes, he paid homage to... Yeah. And then Kevin Costner and Jack Nicholson were considered to play Bill, but they didn't.
I liked the... Because I've never seen him before.
Yeah.
I like the unknown.
And then I think the brother to Bill, I think his name's Bud. He was from Reservoir Dogs. He was the crazy guy.
Oh, that's right.
Who still is the brother of John Travolta's character in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And then the Crazy 88 fight scene was changed to black and white for compliance reasons. Does that mean because of the blood?
Yes.
Was it because of the blood? Because it was so bloody.
So they make it, then obviously the... I think it was the Chinese...
No, Japan. In Japan, they were the only country to get to see that scene in color.
In color, yeah.
Obviously, maybe because they filmed it there. But I loved how they transitioned it back to color when she blinked. I don't know if you picked that up.
No, not actually.
Oh, Ryan! Oh, how did you not pick that up? I loved that. I was like, Quentin Tarantino's, he adds these little stupid details that don't mean anything to anyone. And you're just like, okay, I'm just like, thank you, Quentin.
I was blown away just by the fact that she actually survived that.
Yeah. She's awesome. She's actually probably could be my favorite character in any film of all time.
Maybe it's because I missed it because I was like...
Maybe you're blinking. But then also, I loved how... The whole black and white still, even though obviously they changed it to black and white for compliance reasons, it still was like nostalgic. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I liked that they did that because they had the anime sequence and then also they had two Wilhelm screams in the Crazy
88.
Did you hear both? I also heard both of them. I was like, and then later on,
that
was really cool.
Yeah. So I don't know if you noticed, but in this film, so Kill Bill Part 1, there were 41 deaths. Kill Bill Part 2, there's only 3. All of them...
Oh, obviously it's over.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Thanks,
Ryan. All of them, every death was done by a woman.
Yeah. Because it was... Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That's hectic, man.
Power to the ladies.
Yeah, Quentin's out here.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed this film. And I'm not a Charlie's Angels fan. I honestly am not. But this film doesn't give you Charlie's Angels vibes. Right, Ryan? Right?
Definitely not.
Okay. Also, the finale of the film took 8 weeks to shoot. Imagine, for 2 months, they were just killing people. Because that whole fight sequence is just about, like,
Hi,
people being killed.
My name's Ryan. So what do you do in Kill Bill? I die.
For 8 weeks. I died for 8 weeks.
I die.
And then Uma Thurman's stunt double, her name was Zoe Bell, was actually injured. She injured her back while working on this film, but she didn't mention it for fear of being replaced. I'm like, what the hell? This chick is insane. So you injure your back, which is... A back injury is extremely painful. And I mean, a back injury, you can't, like, it's your back. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, you can't, like, you'll just, like, put my leg to the side. She injured her back and didn't say anything because she didn't want to be replaced, which means she did stunt double work with an injured back.
Yeah, she, like, walks away. What was that? Love that song.
I love that song. And then it took... This is insane. Ryan, this is why it's 2 volumes, right? It took 6 years to write the entire script. It took 6 years. 6 years.
Such a simple story.
It wasn't simple, though. To write the entire script.
But it's like...
Before, it was split into 2 parts. I don't think he originally wanted to make 2 parts. I think it just, the story became so massive that they realized, otherwise you would have had like a 4 to 5 hour film.
Yeah.
The original draft of the script was 220 pages long.
And what's the rule with a page? A page?
A minute a page.
A minute a page,
So the 220 minutes long would have been the original draft. Mm. 2 hours is 120 minutes. So that's
Well,
it's just short of 4 hours.
Well, 2:40, I think, is 4 hours, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's 20 minutes short of a four-hour film. Mm. That's why they cut it into two volumes. But 6 years. He took 6 years to write the... That's insane.
I don't think I'd be able to do that, eh?
I respect him for it,
I think I'd get to like here and be like, okay, guys, listen, is this really working out? Is this worth it? I'm bored. Let's write another film.
Are you sure they were bored, though?
Let's finish... No, no.
That's the thing with this story, like...
But that's what I'm saying. For me, that would have been me.
You...
Yeah, I can't keep on one thing for so long. I'm just like...
Yeah, let's move on to greater things. Although this is... I honestly didn't expect any of Quentin Tarantino's films to move to number one, if you understand what I'm saying. Mm. Like, I honestly didn't... Like, I love Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, let me finish what I'm saying. And I love Django, and I love Inglourious. But honestly, this film... But at the same time, I feel like you can't put Quentin Tarantino's film in a list because they're all so different. Mm. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I feel like I just have a new number one favorite of Quentin Tarantino. Like, I have four favorites now. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm. But I didn't expect Kill Bill to do it because I've also seen like footage before. Like, I've seen footage of the crazy 88 sequence. I mean, it's such a famous film moment. Yeah. So like, and I was like, yeah, that movie with the chick with the sword where she's killing all those Japanese people. That's literally what I thought in my head. But I loved the movie. So I even said to my family, you guys need to watch Kill Bill. It's very bloody, but it's not like...
It's a bloody good film.
It's, it's not like... I won't show, especially my mom and sister. My dad, I'd say watch it. But like The Revenant, I will not show that movie to my mom and sister. And if they wanted to watch it, I'll be like, don't do it. Because I know them. This film isn't like that. It honestly is... It's a good film.
Go and watch... I mean, go and listen to our podcast on The Revenant.
Mm-hmm. Then you'll know.
In your spare time.
If you don't have a faint heart, you know, then watch The Revenant. Mm.
You find out what a bear attack really does. I saw a picture on YouTube of a guy, and it said friends reunited, and the guy's sleeping in a bear's like arms, like full-grown bear, the full paw, and he's laying there, and the bear's like, and I'm just like, you idiot, get out of there.
Go and watch the movie where Leonardo DiCaprio gets mauled by a bear.
Yeah, don't run. Just
let it crawl.
Ooh, I don't know what you're gonna do.
Bear spray.
You
don't know what we're talking about?
Did you
pack, go listen to...
Did you pack the bear spray?
Yeah.
Imagine laying there and then you're like...
Oh, no.
Reach into your pocket. You're like, oh, no. And then you look and then you saw there it is laying over there. Look at the bear. Look at the bear spray.
You're like, I'm dead.
Look at the bear.
I accept my fate.
And you're just like, Lord, it's been a good life.
Lie down to die. No, but I thoroughly enjoyed Kill Bill. And I also, okay, so the first two films that Quentin Tarantino did, it was very heavy male leads. So like the first film didn't even have a woman in it. The second film obviously had Uma Thurman's character, but it was mainly focused on men. Then Jackie Brown, he kind of switched it to the main character was a woman. And then this film, once again,
she was the protagonist, right?
Yes, yeah. Jackie Brown, yeah. Mm. And then in this film, the bride is the protagonist. Then obviously it's very female heavy.
And the female kill all the males.
Yeah. But I'm looking so forward to doing volume two.
Mm.
Like, I really am. And I love how the way he ended it. So it wasn't just like in my mind, I was like, yo, volume two is obviously she's going to go kill the other three people. But the fact that he brought the daughter in, you're like, oh my goodness. Cause now there's so much
What? Let's predict what could possibly happen in volume two.
She's either going to kill...
Plot twist?
I hope she doesn't die. Because you know, she still says to the woman that she kills in the beginnings, obviously in the beginning, her daughter sees her...
Where's the daughter?
As in, whose daughter?
The first woman's daughter.
At the house? Where she left her?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And she says to her, if in a couple of years, if you can't forgive me... Then I give you permission to kill me.
I'll be waiting.
Yeah, I'll be waiting. And then she walks out. So like, does the daughter come?
You see?
Like, kill her. I hope that doesn't happen. I don't want her to die. I like her.
You see, for me, when I saw that, I was like,
Yeah. I don't want her to die. Bill must die. It's called Kill Bill. But if Bill does not die, what is the point?
But think about it. We're in a... we've realized with Quentin Tarantino that he takes a horrible situation and then at the end he turns it into...
Although he hasn't... Okay, he did do that with Jackie Brown. But with the two films before that, he hadn't... he sort of did, I suppose.
Still learning, yeah. Pulp Fiction...
Pulp Fiction he actually sort of did. Yeah.
He did. Jackie Brown...
Sort of. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed
it. Kill Bill. You know, the daughter's still alive.
If you haven't watched Kill Bill, go and watch Kill Bill. Mm. I loved the toe sequence. Which... What did she say? Move. What was that? What was she telling? It was move, right? I think so.
Move your toe. Move your little toe.
And then it moves and then she smiles.
Move your little toe.
Then she says, now for the easy part. Didn't she say now for the easy part? Yeah. No, but that hospital sequence was also insane, man. What the hell? Mm. What is wrong with people?
Mm. Buck.
What is wrong? Oh, my goodness. I was just like, that's terrible. And you know what's sad is that probably happens.
Yeah.
That, mm-hmm. If you don't know what we're talking about, go watch the film.
Mm.
Yeah. So this has been The Movie Show.
On your favorite ORSPS.
And we'll be back next week.
And don't forget to press like and you subscribe because you liked the video.
Yeah. Peace.
It's that simple. Become part of the family today because radio has never been better with Active FM.
This is Radio On Demand. What you want, when you want it.
It's Active FM. Active FM.
Radio has never been better, baby. This is Active FM. Go to www.activefm.co.za for more.